Chapter 46. Blue took on two more legitimate jobs before restocking with foodstuffs on Sitote for another supply run to Watase. Jin was starting to doubt they'd ever go to their secret base, the headquarters that apparently connected Blue's group to a wider network, one the Empire wanted to take down. She started to like working with Blue and the rest of the crew, and she hated that. The more she fell into a friendship with them, the more acutely aware Jin was of the futility of it all. She had already infected the ship with a tracker code. Every time they passed an Imperial checkpoint or made it through a blockade, Blue beamed at Jin. And Jin knew that Admiral Rockwin was logging the ship's location. It wasn't that she felt Blue was making the right choice by subverting the Empire. She just liked Blue and her crew as people. If she could convince them to do something other than undermine the Empire, to leave this system and quit dabbling in insurgencies, Jin would happily join them. The day before they reached Watase, Blue knocked on Jin's door. "You've not been with us that long," she said, "and the crew likes working with you." "Not Berta," Jin said. Blue laughed. "Berta likes you well enough for a human," she said. "Don't worry, she's coming around." She shouldn't, Jin thought. "Anyway, after this mission, we're going off system. There are other people we work with, other partisans. I want you to meet the rest of them. I think you'll like what we're doing." Jin's heart sank. So, she was finally being taken to the main base. It was over. But she liked Blue enough to want to be honest. "Blue," she said slowly, "I don't understand you. You have a ship. You have a crew. Why are you trying to take on the Empire all on your own?" Blue leaned in conspiratorially. "Who says I'm alone?" "Damn," Jin thought. "Look, Blue, I like you. But I'm not here for some bigger mission, or ideals, or anything like that. I care about getting paid. I don't want to get involved in anything bigger. I have seen how bad things can be. I don't want to be a part of that." "Liana, you saw Watase. You saw what a difference we made. I saw people who should have given up their claims on a mine and gotten off world a long time ago," Jin snapped. "The best thing you can do right now is give up whatever group you're in and quit making Imperial enemies." Or rebel allies, she thought. Blue stared at her for several long moments. "I don't believe that," she said. "And I don't believe you believe that." "You're wrong," Jin promised. Blue smiled. "We'll see." Blue shut the door behind her, and Jin stared at it silently for a long time. "I tried," Jin thought. "Blue was a good person. Too bad she was a rebel." "I'm always nervous seeing star destroyers like that," Shaburn said, glaring at the blockade surrounding Watase. "They ain't natural, ships that big."
"Don't be nervous," Blue said from the co-pilot's seat. "Liana has us covered."
She looked over her shoulder and shot Jin a smile. Jin swallowed. She would be so happy when she could quit being in the middle of two groups she hated. It was almost over.
And then, even if it took every credit she had, Jin was leaving the 5 points system.
"Uploading our clearance codes and manifest now," Shaburn said.
"They've locked a tractor beam on us," Blue said, her voice growing tense.
"The codes ain't working this time," Berta glowered at Jin.
"They should," Jin said, surprised.
"They're just doing a deeper scan," Blue said, cutting through the tension. "They're still going to accept Liana's codes."
After several uneasy moments, Shaburn said,
"Codes cleared."
Jin let out a whoosh of breath.
Berta glared at her.
"Tractor beam still locked," Blue said.
"The Star Destroyer is hailing us directly," Shaburn added.
A steady beeping filled the control room.
We should answer it, Shaburn said.
We should, Blue agreed, but she hesitated a moment longer before answering the incoming holo.
Admiral Rockwin from the Star Destroyer Authority,
the Admiral said in a crisp voice.
This ship has been identified as part of a partisan group working to undermine the Empire.
How did they know?
Shaburn asked in a voice that broke Jin's heart.
Prepare for boarding. Do not attempt to resist.
The Admiral's voice cut out abruptly.
How did they know?
Berta snarled, cutting her eyes to Jin. Settle, Blue ordered. We know nothing now. They don't have proof. Our docs will check out. She shot Jin a brief smile. You two with me, she said to Berta and Jin after giving Shaburn the order to unlock the port. The three were silent as they clomped down the metal hallway to the transport tube. Blue stood very straight, her eyes on the port as it opened and two stormtroopers marched onto her ship. It was taking everything in her to show courage, Jin could tell. A pair of Imperial officers followed the stormtroopers, then Admiral Rockwin and two more troopers. They lined up in a curve around Blue, Berta, and Jin.
Secure the ship, the Admiral said languidly, and three of the stormtroopers filed out.
Admiral, Blue said, not a hint of quaver in her voice. Our docks are in order. We are a legitimate operation, freighting cargo throughout the system. We pay our fees and...
The Admiral cut her off with a bored wave of her hand. You're all under arrest for conspiring against the Empire.
She did not even deign to look Blue in the face as she said it. Before Blue could protest, the fourth stormtrooper stepped forward, slapping the Deveronian in cuffs.
Hey!
Berta bellowed. The stormtrooper blasted her, and she dropped to the ground. Blue cried out, but the blast had been set to stun. The stormtrooper cuffed Berta before she could wake up. And Jin just stood there. The stormtrooper approached with a third set of cuffs.
No, Jin said, stepping back and shaking her head.
Blue narrowed her eyes.
Her too, Admiral Rockwin said idly.
No, Jin said louder, jerking away from the stormtrooper. How did you find us out?
Blue snarled, wrenching against her cuffs. The Admiral smiled, her lips curving up slowly, maliciously.
How?
Blue shouted. The other three stormtroopers marched back to the port, the rest of the crew cuffed, their heads low.
That disgusting Raeth gave you up before he died, Admiral Rockwin said.
But even if he hadn't, Lyanna was kind enough to plant a tracker on you. We know everything. As captain, you'll be executed for your treason.
She stated this in a mild, matter-of-fact tone that brooked no argument.
The others, she shrugged.
Traitor!
Blue screamed at Jin.
I tried to tell you,
Jin said. Her eyes moved to Blue, and she saw only fury and distrust in the Deveronian's gaze.
You didn't try that hard, Blue snarled.
There was such pure rage in Blue's eyes that Jin flinched. But there was something else there that she recognized, too, that reminded her of Saw. He'd had that same fury. And Jin realized, with a shock, she had once burned with belief, too. Her heart thudded in her chest, hollow.
Her as well, Admiral Rockwin said in an irritated voice, flicking her hand at Jin. Hurry up.
I did what you said, Jin said, whirling around to face the Admiral.
She was aware, and ashamed, of the plea in her voice, of the way the crew of the X-01 stood witness to her treachery.
Do you think that protects you?
Admiral Rockwin said, feigning confusion.
Don't be stupid, girl. You're a petty criminal at best. We have no further need of you. And besides, she added, shrugging, if I do, I know exactly where I'll be able to find you.
As Jin stood there in shock, the stormtrooper finally clasped one of her wrists in a cuff.
In one of the Empire's glorious labor camps, the Admiral finished.
Blind panic surged in Jin. As the stormtrooper reached for her other wrist, she swung around wildly, slamming her fist painfully into his helmet.
"Come peacefully," the stormtrooper ordered. "Like hell I will,"
Jin snarled. She kicked out, low, sweeping the stormtrooper to the ground. Another attacked her, twisting her cuffed arm painfully behind her, but Jin wrenched free, pushing him away. Something primal within her roared in her blood, and she fought against the stormtroopers viciously, far more desperately than she'd ever fought before. She felt certain that fate had finally caught up with her, that if she didn't escape now, she never would. But it did no good. With the help of a stun prod and a sharp kick in her ribs, a stormtrooper dragged Jin, cuffed, over to the wall, forcing her to stand beside Blue as the Admiral strolled back to her Star Destroyer and the troopers prepared to put them in the brig. Jin stared at the metal floor, her eyes stinging. She could tell that Blue was watching her, and she dared to look up at the Deveronian, over to Shawburn. They had accepted her. They had wanted her to be a part of their movement, their cause. They had put their hope in her hands, and she had thrown it away. For nothing. In the end, she hadn't helped Blue or the cause or even herself. She had only wanted to escape this life, and now she was being crushed by it. "If I was going to go out like this anyway," Jin thought as the troopers led her to the brig. "It should have been for more than nothing."
Imperial Detention Center and Labor Camp, LEG 817. Location, Wobani. Prisoner, Leona Halleck, number 6295A. Crimes, forgery of Imperial documents, resisting arrest, aggravated assault, possession of unsanctioned weapon. 2 counts.
Month 05.
Her trial had been a joke. Admiral Rockwin had passed down her sentence with barely a glance in Jin's direction. Jin had not been permitted to speak for herself or to defend her crimes of forgery and resisting arrest. When she tried to protest that she had been committing forgery for the Empire and had been resisting an unfair arrest, Commander Sullenge had panicked, suggesting that the Admiral fit Jin with a Muzz regulator. The cold steel wrapped around her head, covering her mouth, and Jin had not been allowed to speak another word until after the Admiral had passed judgment and sentenced her to the LEG 817 prison camp on Wobani. She had 2 bits of luck. The first was that the Admiral Rockwin believed her scan docs were legitimate and that Jin's real name was Leona Halleck. The second was that when they scanned her for weapons, the stormtroopers in charge of inspecting Jin had thought her necklace was a worthless piece of glass. As she'd been led away, Jin had wondered if she could effectively fight back. The Muzz regulator around her mouth bit into the thin skin of her skull, and the binders on her wrists were heavy and unbreakable. When she tried to jerk away from the stormtroopers holding her elbows, their grip tightened, and one of them warned he had a stun prod in his other hand. He sparked it in front of her, and Jin did not need a second warning. She did not see Blue or the others. She never saw any of them again. She liked to pretend that they had escaped somehow, but she never really believed it. And then, Jin had been put on the prison transport ship and taken to Wobani, and the warden had led her to her cell. And there had been no more chances to escape. After Sarada died, Jin had time to think of Akshaya, who believed that the giant empire would never bother with ants like her. Of her father, who had chosen the Empire because he had known, even that long before, that there was no real choice. Of Blue, who had chosen to fight, who had believed that was the only option. The only thing Jin knew for sure was that her mother had believed hope was the most important thing in the universe. And Jin had none of that left.
"I'm going to escape," her new cellmate, Amiri Allen, said. Her smooth, pale yellow skin and the pattern of blackish-blue diamonds across her face stood out in the dim light.
"That's nice," Jin said in a tired voice.
"I'm going to," Yala said again, her voice starting to rise from a whisper. "You can help."
"I just want to sleep," Jin rolled over in her cubby.
The Mirialin made a disgusted noise deep in her throat. "How can you just accept this?" she hissed in the dark.
"Because," Jin thought, "this is all there is."
"What are you?" Yala said, after enough time had passed that Jin had dared to hope the conversation was over.
"Human?" Jin replied in the darkness, not sure of Yala's question.
"No, I mean, were you a rebel? Why are you here on Wobani?"
Jin turned around, her mattress emitting a puff of musty air as her body shifted on it. She could see Yala's big azure eyes in the dim light, watching her.
Was Jin a rebel?
Not really. And she'd even worked for the Empire, not against it. But when it mattered, when Hatter and Akshaya had been threatened, when Jin found herself on a slave ship, when it mattered, Jin had chosen her side instinctively. She had chosen to fight. Was that enough to make her a rebel? Yala was waiting for her answer. Jin turned back to the wall.
Yala was part of an influx of new prisoners. She knew others at Wobani, a network of people from planets in the Mirial system, a small rebellious militia group. The Empire had separated the group across different prisons, but it hadn't done a good enough job. Yala made contact with other prisoners, brief coded exchanges. And every night, Yala glared at Jin with contempt.
"You could do so much more," she hissed, disappointed. "We could overtake the entire prison. There aren't that many guards. The prison is overcrowded."
Jin ignored her. But she noticed who Yala spoke to, and how. She noticed the laser pick she'd pinched from the work detail, and where she hid it under her mattress. She noticed the way Yala grew more and more jumpy, waiting for some message. Yala reminded Jin of Saw.
He had said once that one person could turn the tide of war with nothing more than a pointed stick.
She had thought then that he had believed in her and her ability to do such marvels. She knew now she wasn't that kind of person. But Yala might have been. And then the moment came. Yala's group waited until the hour before work detail started. An alarm blared from the level below and above them, and Yala jumped up, throwing her mattress aside and pulling out the laser pick and a large impact hammer drill that Jin had somehow missed earlier.
"It's time," Yala said, a fierceness in her voice that the prison hadn't been able to stamp out. "You in or out?"
Impossibly, the door to their cell swung open. Jin stared at it, shocked. Before she could answer, Yala thrust the impact hammer drill into Jin's open hands.
"Come on!"
she yelled, racing out of the room, laser pick held high. She had made it about 6 meters past the door when blaster fire rang out. 2 short bursts, and Jin watched as Yala's body crumpled. The stormtroopers swarmed the hall, a pair racing into Jin's open cell.
"She has a weapon," one stormtrooper said.
Jin dropped the blasting hammer on the ground, her eyes wide, her hands shooting into the air. She had a new cellmate after that. She didn't know what species Nail was, and Nail wasn't the type to share a friendly conversation with. She was short, tentacles obscuring her mouth, with gelatinous eyes and long fingers. And she hated Jin for no discernible reason. Still, Jin appreciated her new cellmate. She didn't make Jin hope for more.
Imperial Detention Center and Labor Camp, LEG 817. Location, Wobani. Prisoner, Liana Halleck, number 6295A. Crimes: forgery of Imperial documents, resisting arrest, aggravated assault, possession of unsanctioned weapon, 2 counts. Escape from custody.
Month 06.
Hope, Jin had found, was by far the most dangerous thing in a prison. It made people do stupid things. It made them believe there was life outside the walls. And furthermore, hope hurt. It was a physical, painful ache deep inside her chest. Jin felt it eating away at her lungs when she coughed from the dust on the rare days she was given farm duty. It gnawed at her belly when the ration cubes didn't satisfy the hunger. It burned her throat when the stormtroopers didn't bother refilling their filtration canteens. It stung at her eyes every night before she passed out from exhaustion. There were ants in the cell, no doubt drawn by Nail's stench. Jin's cellmate was proving difficult. She had even threatened to kill Jin. One more thing for her to survive. Jin watched the ants marching up the wall and through the corner where it met with the ceiling. There was nothing for them to eat there, but still they marched. Jin placed her hand against the wall, directly in the ants' path, and they adjusted course, curving around the edge of her fingers. The ants reminded her of Akshaya, and Akshaya reminded her of Hatter, and Hatter reminded her of just how much she had lost. She curled into herself, her hand dropping from the wall to the leather cord around her neck. They hadn't taken her necklace. She had been certain they would, but they hadn't. She still had this one link to her mother, her past. It wouldn't be hard to die. She saw death every day on Wobani. It was just a matter of putting down one's tools, refusing to work. And then a stormtrooper came and held a blaster up, and it was over. Simple. Jin felt as if her chest were filled with ash. But there was one ember still remaining, flickering orange and red, refusing to die. Jin clutched her kyber crystal, the hard edges digging into the calluses on her palms. Her mother had given the crystal to her because she had expected Jin to survive, to live, to not give up hope. The alarm for the work shift sounded. Jin stood. Her cellmate stood. They waited by the door. If they were lucky, they'd be selected for farm work. They were lucky. When the door slid open, they held their wrists up, waiting for a stormtrooper to put their shackles on. Jin didn't flinch as the heavy metal restraints closed over her wrists, the light on the base blinking from green to red. She and her cellmate filed in behind the others. They marched, their feet beating out a steady rhythm that shook the walls. Jin knew what to do. Follow her orders. She knew what to say. Nothing. But she also watched. Her eyes flicked left and right, seeing the stormtrooper, the other prisoners, the walls. She was waiting for an opportunity. The prison transport tank was not comfortable. It wasn't meant to be. Each prisoner was given a small, hard metal seat that folded down from the wall. Beams provided barriers between the seats, and the aisle was large enough for the stormtroopers to constantly patrol. Jin pushed down her seat awkwardly with her cuffed hands and slid into it. A stormtrooper came up behind her and used the magna locks to connect the center of her cuffs to the metal chair. It was surprisingly cold on Wobani. The cold crept through the transport tank's walls and air vents. It seeped into her bones. She flexed her fingers.
The gloves they gave the workers did little to protect from cold. They were only meant to keep the skin on their palms so they could work longer. Jin thought of the synth-skinned gloves she'd inherited from Maya, and a pang of sorrow bit into her. Across from her, Jin's cellmate stared down at the floor. Her long mouth tentacles, reddish-brown and drooping, fluttered nervously. Jin leaned back. The Aqualish in the group chittered angrily at the rough way the stormtrooper clipped his binders to the seat. They dug into his wrists painfully.
The prison tank's engine warmed up and heaved into motion.
It bumped along the muddy, unpaved road, jostling the prisoners. And then, Jin felt a different sort of lurch. Her head jerked to the big gray door at the end of the aisle.
There was a glow behind it, like the rising sun peeking through the cracks around the frame.
And then, the door blew off. The stormtrooper who had rushed forward was blown back from the blast, his body prone in the aisle. Jin jerked up, cursing her restraints silently, her eyes wide. A group of humans rushed onto the transport, a tall man with dark hair and stubble on his chin at the front of the line, while two other men took defensive stances with their blasters. His gaze moved quickly around the cabin. He was clearly looking for someone specific. Her.